Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Astoria Planning Commission. At this time, the meeting will come to order. Roll call, please.
I will do it. Commissioner Spence.
Here.
Commissioner Ennis.
Here.
Commissioner Eastley.
Here.
Commissioner Mitchell.
Here.
Commissioner Moore.
Here.
Commissioner Fitzpatrick.
Here.
Chairperson Pearson.
Here. Are there any corrections to the regular meeting minutes of July 26, 2016, or August 2nd, 2016?
I move to approve both sets of minutes.
Aye, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are approved. At this point, we'll move into our public hearing section of the meeting. The Astoria Planning Commission will handle several matters tonight with a public hearing. The order on the follow for each public hearing is outlined in the handout procedures for conduct of public hearings available from the staff. Scheduled public hearings are itemized in the agenda. In each case, I'll identify the subject, announce when the public hearing is open, and ask anyone interested to testify regarding the matter. If you wish to speak, be sure to sign in with the hearing sign-in sheet at the opposite side of the room. Be sure to rest remarks on whether or not the application question meets the necessary criteria. The significant criteria that apply to each issue are listed in the staff report, which staff has available. If you fail to raise an issue in person or by letter to the Astoria Planning Commission or City Council, an appeal that issue will not be permitted. Our first public hearing tonight is a permit extension request for Elizabeth Nielsen for the Astoria Conservancy of Music at 1103 Grand Avenue. Does anyone object to the jurisdiction of the Planning Commission to hear this matter at this time? Does any member of the Planning Commission feel he or she has a conflict of interest or any ex parte contacts to declare?
I will state that I have I am a member of the First Presbyterian Church. However, this won't affect my personal finances, and I do not believe that it will affect my vote.
I'll just state that my son is currently a music student there, but that will not affect my objective.
Thank you. Could we have the staff report and recommendation, please?
Yeah, this is a pretty straightforward annual request to extend the permit from what was originally a conditional use permit to allow temporary use. Sorry, so this is just extending the permit for an additional year. She's done this since 2003. We're required an annual extension. It's the exact same proposal. Nothing has changed since last year.
Very good. Are there any questions for staff? At this time, we'll open the public testimony. Is there a presentation by the applicants? Is there a presentation by persons who would speak in favor of the application? Is there a presentation by persons who would speak impartial to the application? Is there a presentation by persons who would speak against the application? At this time, public testimony is closed. Commission discussion and deliberation.
I have no problem.
Well, as the city planner stated, it's pretty straightforward.
It seems to me that it's the use. Excuse me, are you done? You done?
I'm sorry.
Are you done? Did I interrupt you?
I'm sorry, can I start there?
Okay. I need to talk louder. Did I interrupt you? Oh, maybe it's
on.
That's on. Did I interrupt you?
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I interrupt you?
No, okay.
All right, moving on.
No, I have to say something. I think it's...
Yes, please.
I think when we were able to help use an existing building in a non-obstructive kind of use, I think that's great. And I think this is a wonderful continuation.
I would agree and offer my full support.
I support the application.
I do as well.
I do as well.
I'll make a motion to approve the permit extension, the request on the conditional use permit CU0304.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is approved. The Planning Commission's ruling shall be appealed by may be appealed by any person within standing to the city council within 15 days after the planning commission has made its decision. The appeal shall be in writing, shall be filed with the community development director. If an appeal is not filed with the city within the 15-day period, the decision of the planning commission shall be final. You're all set to go? Sorry you missed everything. You're welcome. Our next public hearing tonight is for an amendment by the community development director to amend the Astoria Development Code, Article A9, Administrative Procedures. Does anyone object to the jurisdiction of the planning commission to hear this matter at this time? Does any member of the planning commission feel she or he has a conflict of interest and any ex parte contacts to declare? Can we have the reading of the staff report?
Absolutely. Thank you, Chair Pearson. Thank you, members of the planning commission. So we are back at it. This proposal was before you in various work sessions starting, I think, back in February of this year. We held two work sessions, and then we were holding a hearing for this back in April. We decided to hold a work session, kind of a town hall-like format for this proposal, as well as the one that's going to be immediately followed, this one we're talking about right now. So the pause, and it wasn't because of this proposal for the administrative procedure. It was more about the next one, and we'll go into more detail about that here in a little bit. The proposal, A1601, is all about housekeeping. Our house wasn't in order. It needed to be re-scrubbed. We have a chapter in our development code in order to process land use applications. It had not been gone through in quite some time, so we have used a small city development code that was developed by the state a number of years ago as a model code. We borrowed many provisions from that development code to add to our development code. We have reorged all of the applications into types, type 1 through type 4, type 1 being ministerial, or the counter-type applications. Type 2 meaning administrative requires public notice. Type 3, which is the one we just heard, the conditional use permit extension, that required a public hearing. And then legislative, which is the one that we're actually talking about right now, as well as the one we're going to talk about here in a little bit. So we've gone ahead and reorged all those applications so it's much user-friendly for applicants and much more user-friendly for Nancy and I and for future folks in sitting in my seat. The only substantive change in terms of from a public involvement standpoint is a requirement for on-site notices, which we see in other cities but we don't see here in Astoria. So for type 3 applications that come before you, the Planning Commission, Design Review Committee, as well as the Historic Landmarks Commission, there'll be an on-site notice to give people who are renters particularly notice about those applications that are before one of those bodies. With that, I will entertain any questions from the commission.
I would just say that this isn't the most fun work to do, I know, and I appreciate the level of detail and carefulness that went into it because it solves a lot of problems down the road.
There didn't appear to be any significant changes from the last time we saw.
No, I did not make any amendments since the last time we looked at it. I did not hear any feedback from the public nor from individual commission members or council members for that matter. So it is the same proposal that you looked at last time.
Are there any other questions for staff?
What I noticed were changing the 100 feet of providing notice to people within 100 feet to 200 feet, as you said, posting to the site.
Yep.
Was there anything else?
So other than reordering those types that I discussed already, no. It's the radius of the affected property owners that received notice. So that we've already been doing that from a best practice standpoint. It just wasn't in our development code. So we're simply matching what we've been doing to what is going to be now required if this were to be adopted by council. The only significant change is the on-site notice, which I already described.
Thank you. So at this time, we will open the public testimony. Is there a presentation tonight by persons in favor? Yes, sir. I'd invite you to come up. And for the record, if you could state your name and address for us, please.
My name is Jack Osterberg. I live at 1711 Grand Avenue here in Astoria. Speaking on this issue tonight, I took a quick review of what's proposed and it all seemed to make sense to me. I'm really here to speak a lot on, speak more on the next item, but I thought as long as I was here, I would just say that I thought all of the changes that were proposed made sense. They added some necessary information, and I think that they become more in line with what the city's already been doing, as well as meeting state land use law. Are there any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other presentations in favor of the application? Are there any presentations to persons who would speak impartial to the application?
Members of the Astoria Planning Commission staff, my name is Doug Thompson. I'm a citizen of Astoria. The address is 342 14th Street, number 602. I want to say that in theory, I think I'm very supportive of improvements and streamlining to administrative procedures regarding land use issues. I may think this is just fine. In fact, my cursory review of the material that I was only able to get to in the last few days is that, you know, it looks pretty good. Some new information from Mr. Cronin this evening that League of Oregon Cities, is that right, or is it the Oregon chapter of the planners group that has the model?
Yeah, it's actually the Department of Land Conservation Development, which is a state agency.
DLCD, thank you. News to me that there's a template of a model. I'm a great believer in models. It would be, for example, very helpful to me to know specifically where Mr. Cronin felt that there were areas of departure from that model or that template, and the reasons for that. That, unless I missed something, that wasn't contained in the report. In fact, until the middle of last week, I mean, I've known about this hearing tonight on this particular topic for several weeks, the notice was published. But I didn't, the text of the materials wasn't released until the middle of last week. And maybe you all knew, but I sure didn't know that it was simply the same, almost identical to what was discussed last spring. So again, my quibble with this is not perhaps substantial, but I think the fact that for some reason it just quickly died last spring, doesn't matter the reason it did, and here we are some 6 months later revisiting the issue, and we only find out in the last several days that it's identical to the previous word. I would simply say because Mr. Cronin chose to link these two chapters, administrative procedures and ADUs, as a pair going forward, that this matter be continued over to match the continuance, if there is to be one, on the ADUs. If you decide tonight to just move forward and send this off to the City Council, fine. But there's a number of us who have not had, I think, an adequate opportunity to review this material at this time. Thank you.
Are there any other presentations by persons who would speak impartial to the application? Are there any presentations by persons who would speak against the application? At this time, public testimony is closed, commission discussion and deliberation.
wondering if Mr. Cronin might want to speak to the reason for the delay.
Yeah, so I provided that summary in my opening comments. So this proposal got hitched to the other proposal only for efficiency's sake. There is no relativity between the two proposals. Other than that, they're in the development code together. It's the only relationship between the two. So I could have easily asked you for to hold the hearing for this proposal back last April. We decided to take them both off in order to provide more public comment opportunity. And so I think we've done that. The fact that I didn't include that it was the model code in Southport, sorry about that. Whether that was relative or not, who knows, but if people want that kind of information, I can certainly provide it. It's just the best practice that we have. I think that's it, if that addresses the questions that I heard.
Any comments at all?
Well, I think we were ready to move forward on Article 9 last time I saw it, and it hasn't really had any, hasn't had any changes really to it since then, so I don't have any problems as it is now.
I would agree. I support the changes, and in particular, the higher standard for mail notice, taking it from 100 feet to 200 feet. I think it's a much higher standard, increases the transparency, and lets people know what's going on, so I would support it.
I think posting is also effective.
Mm-hmm. The on-site notice is a great change. As Mr. Cronin said, it'll let renters of properties know that something's happening, because normally they would only the owners of the building would be notified.
Is anyone willing to offer a motion?
I move the Astoria Planning Commission adopt the findings and conclusions contained in the staff report A-1601 and recommend that the Astoria City Council adopt the amendment requested by the Community Development Director.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is approved. So for staff, a quick question.
Yes.
Because it is the city as the applicant, does the ruling still get appealed, or that goes to City Council as far as I want to read?
Yeah, so there's no appeal for legislative from the Planning Commission to the City Council. However, the City Council could reserve the right to table it or remand it back down to the Planning Commission for further consideration, hopefully with instructions in terms of what to look for. But since it's legislative, you're a committee of the City Council, just like Congress has committees under themselves. So that's how the legislative process works.
Very good. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Our next public hearing tonight is Amendment A-16-02 by the Community Development Director to amend the City Development Code Article 3, Accessory Dwelling Units. Does anyone object to the jurisdiction of the Planning Commission to hear this matter at this time? Does any member of the Planning Commission feel he or she has a conflict of interest or any ex parte contacts to declare? We have the staff report and recommendation, please.
Yes, you may. So, as I was saying before, the previous application, we took a timeout last April to hold a sort of an impromptu work session in sort of town hall format, where we had a packed house looking at this proposal. Based on that response, the City Council took notice. They held their own work session in July. Staff received direction at that point to hold off on Article 2, which has the zoning category, so that's why that is not being looked at tonight by the Planning Commission. What is being looked at is Section 3020, which is our accessory dwelling section of Article 3. That allows for standards for folks who own a single-family home to put an accessory dwelling or a granny flat or mother-in-law unit onto their property. So what we're doing with this proposal, just to summarize really quickly, is to allow more flexibility. So currently, you can only convert a garage, an existing garage that is attached to the house or a basement. Under this proposal, you will be able to use the property much more efficiently. So you can do the existing things that I just described, as well as build a new garage with the living unit above it, or add a tiny home. So it's providing much more flexibility to be able to use that property and add an additional income stream for that property owner to either fix up the house or do whatever they feel like doing with it. So the proposal before you has not changed drastically from the last time we looked at it. I will say that there is one significant change. If you remember, Article 2 included some changes to the lot size standards. So for instance, for single family, we're looking at 5,000 to 4,500 square feet. Because we're not looking at Article 2 tonight, that standard has gone back to what is today's standard, that's 5,000 square feet. So you need that minimum lot size in order to do an extension drawing. If the council decides to move forward on the others, we can go back and take a look at this. But for now, it's that is not changing, that's going back to what is today's standard. With that, no significant changes since last April. Happy to answer any questions from the commission.
I have a couple. 2A in the code. And I think I brought this up last time, and maybe I know some language changed as a result of a comment I made, but the way I read this, an existing detached garage can't be converted to an ADU.
It cannot be today, but can be.
Well, I mean, even with this change, it reads to me that the space above a detached garage can be converted, but the actual detached garage, like if you wanted to not make it a garage anymore and just turn it into a little apartment, doesn't seem to work with this language.
Okay, so that's good feedback. And so if that's what it says, and the commission wants to allow that, you can make that fix tonight.
Right, I would like to see that happen because there's a lot of small garages that are detached that aren't very useful as garages and could become a small studio apartment. Adding another story to that garage will be prohibitively expensive,
right?
Almost certain. So I would like to see that change. Another question along those lines. The location of entrances. It doesn't feel like that the location of entrances applies to a detached structure. It just talks about where another entrance would be on the main residence.
So just so everyone's following along, you're looking at three, 302B3, location of entrances.
So I don't know if it simply doesn't, there wouldn't be any standard on how you would access a detached building, or if that was just overlooked or something.
No, it wasn't something that we considered up to this point. Again, if there was more specific language in there, certainly we can look at that. Is there a certain particular issue you're trying to solve with that?
I would just want there to not be an issue. It just seemed like it was missing.
Okay.
Let's put it that way. Because we talked about location of entrances to ADUs, but it seemed to only apply to the main building. So, and if that's fine, if something doesn't apply to an exterior or a detached, if the entrance can be anywhere, then.
Right. So right now it's saying, in addition to the main entrance, one entrance to the house for the ADU may be located on the side or rear of the house.
Mm-hmm.
So that's more for the main dwelling.
Right.
So if you want to add a sentence in there that says, for detached units, the main entrance should be dot, dot, dot. So you can certainly add that if you feel that addresses an issue.
One thought is if it indeed is a detached garage, you probably want to make sure there is an actual normal doorway now that you're not using a garage door as an entrance.
I don't know if we have to require that. It just seems
pretty, it seems obvious.
It seems pretty obvious that there's a man door or some other door. Yeah.
Yeah. Both for protection of, it just seems pretty obvious, but sometimes people, sometimes it's the obvious thing that catches you up when it's not down in writing.
Does anybody else have any issue with that, or are we just okay with not mentioning detached ADUs on that location?
I have no problem not mentioning.
Yeah, I would agree.
All right. I have two more questions, maybe preemptive questions. How many units do you expect to create as a result of this?
From a market perspective?
Yeah.
I am not in the prediction business. And we actually had this discussion at Lower Columbia Preservation Society meeting just before this meeting. And I can't forecast that. I don't know. What I do know is we're not going to get any if we continue with the existing standard. We know that because
right.
We only have one application in the last 5 years. So something's
so really the city's perspective on this is to open up some opportunities that isn't a floodgate. It might be a trickle in opportunity for some more residences that are lower rent.
I would be surprised if we had more than two or three per year. Pleasantly surprised.
And then likewise, the lot size adjustment that's in here.
Yes.
Do we know how many lots that may affect? Like how many 9,000 square foot lots there are that are 9,500 square foot lots?
I don't know the answer to that. Yeah, so right now, with the lot sizes not changing, we're not seeing a lot of partitions come in because of that 9,000 square feet. They don't have the 10 to build split into two fives. We can certainly run a GIS analysis to show, you know, how many lots would be affected by that.
But if you have certainly a pretty small one.
Yeah, but if you have a 9,000 square foot lot and you have a relatively flat space that you can put an accessory dwelling in or a tiny home, that's a more attractive option than having to wait for the city to do something about the lot sizes.
And then one final question. The tiny home, I think I brought this up one other time. It reads that the dwelling must be constructed off-site and brought onto site attached to a foundation.
It doesn't have to be manufactured off-site, it's just that tiny homes per se are usually normally built off-site. So you can build a stick built on-site tiny home on your property.
You can, because the definition kind of implies that it is constructed off-site.
Yeah, so by making the changes in the accessory dwelling section, that frees up the ability to do a detached unit.
Yeah.
What you call a tiny home or not, it's up to you.
Yeah.
How we're defining tiny home here in the development code is a manufactured dwelling off-site.
Okay. So you can still build a 100 square foot
and that's basically
detached unit.
Hours and hours of watching HGTV.
All right, that answers all my questions.
Are there any other questions for staff?
Yeah, the recommendation it talks about reducing the lot size from 5,000 to 4,500.
Yeah, so the staff report that you have in your packets was just to keep the findings of fact available from that original staff report. So the email that I sent out to you, which we have copies over here, just mentioned that we're using the old staff report for the findings of fact.
I'm similarly concerned, though, that it does, it's the first thing in here in the recommendation. So we're clarifying that it's not, if we...
Yeah, so the recommendation is the amendment. That's what you're recommending to council, not the staff report.
Okay. So if we approve something tonight, this will not be included.
There'll be a fresh staff report provided to the City Council.
Thank you.
I have a problem with many garages at the moment. Parking, we can put parking out on the street instead of on the property. I have a problem with ADUs above a garage, but to eliminate a garage, I think it's a mistake.
Does the garage count as a parking space if there's a driveway to it? Does it count as an extra?
Yeah, what we're finding is no one uses their garages for parking, or they use it to store stuff.
Yeah.
And that's just culturally what we do as Americans.
They'd still be required to have adequate parking if they're gonna add an ADU, although it...
But in here it states it can be on the street also, which I kind of have a problem with. We have neighborhoods that do have parking issues, and putting more parking onto the street by eliminating a garage is a mistake.
I would agree with Commissioner Isom, especially when we get to number seven on off-street parking requirements.
So if it works for the commission, let's go ahead with the public hearing, and then we can discuss after hearing some comments.
Okay.
As well. So at this point, we'll open the public testimony. Is there a presentation by persons in favor of the application? Is there a presentation by persons who would speak impartial to the application?
Members of the commission and staff, once again for the record, Doug Thompson, 342 14th, number 602. I want to say that I am in concept and generally in favor of increasing density in Astoria. I'm in favor of a variety of housing types in order to accomplish the increase in density, because in my view, density is directly related to affordability, not only for the homeowners and renters of the dwellings, but also for the taxpayers and the ratepayers of Astoria. There's a lot of pressure or trends, shall we say, moving in the direction of increasing density. I'm not telling you anything you don't already know. Latest example, the Obama administration just released in the past few days, you may have seen the release, a 32-page toolkit available online for cities and counties to use in increasing density. It is not a politically pain-free exercise, but I believe it's a necessary one if we are going to increase the supply and therefore the affordability of housing of all types. So, I commend Director Cronin and the Planning Commission for dealing with this issue. But once again, I have to ask, I hear the train whistle blowing, and this thing's moving pretty quickly. The recommendation is that you approve it tonight. And I realize that you've dealt with this in, work sessions and previous meetings 6 months ago. But we didn't know that the staff report that was issued just last week and available to the public just last week was the identical staff report from last spring. And now find tonight that indeed, we're not to rely upon that 100% in sending it on to the city council. I do have a question. I received this notice in the mail from the city of Astoria today. It was mailed last Friday, September 23rd. And I'm missing something here. So it's a notice of public hearing for the Astoria City Council for Monday, October 17th. And the purpose of the hearing is to consider these two items tonight, the administrative procedures and this ADU issue. And it says in this paragraph, the Astoria Planning Commission has recommended approval of the request. Explain that procedurally to me. I don't know.
I did not review that before it went out, so I can't tell you why it says that.
What's the notice time required for?
So the notice time requirement is pretty far back. So for us to get something in the paper, we've got to put something out there.
Well, look,
well, Mr. Thompson, we certainly have not approved anything, obviously. That's why we're here tonight, and I could certainly look into how that happened, but I was not the author of that announcement myself either.
Okay, well, look, you know, if errors happen, that's fine, but this was a public notice. And so what's the public to understand about, you know, when would they have an opportunity to comment? I don't want to make a big deal out of it. Now,
the point of the notice, public notice, is to get you out here and it worked.
I'm
going to stop right there. I apologize. That was our mistake. This isn't a discussion. This is an opportunity for you to make a presentation, if you would, but I'm not going to allow a discussion tonight with commissioners.
Sorry. And I want to state for the record, I'm here as an individual. I'm a member of the Lower Columbia Preservation Society, LCPS. I'm a member of the Board of Directors, and I've been designated by the board as the point person for advocacy issues. But I'm not here in that role tonight because the Board of Directors of LCPS has not met specifically on these items to review the materials and to discuss them and therefore take a position, which is another reason I ask as an individual that you continue this very important matter to a date in the future when the public will have an opportunity to look at the recommendations today, not 6 months ago, but today, and comment on it. I want to point out some material that, and I didn't have a whole lot of time to prepare for this, but a quick jump on the internet to the sightlineinstitute.org out of Seattle shows that they did a study within the last 2 years of just this very subject, EDUs. It was a pretty exhaustive study. There's a matrix here that I printed out that's 4 pages long. They surveyed 37 cities, let's just call it 36 cities in the Northwest of all sizes, from the big ones, Vancouver, BC, Seattle, Portland, etc., down to and including some cities in Oregon that were only 2,500 population. And they, how to present that material. So they constructed this matrix, and across the top are 7 criteria. I'm just going to read the titles quickly. These are the 7 things that at least 36 cities have wrestled with to come to conclusions on. Number of ADUs allowed per lot. Off-street parking spaces required per ADU. Must property owner live on site? How many people may live on the lot? How many ADUs can there be, or how big may ADUs be? It's usually a ratio of the larger dwellings floor, main floor. Where in the city are ADUs allowed? And must ADUs match the house, the main house, in exterior design? Those are all important questions. Every one of them is contained in the recommendation that your staff has made. Maybe you made work sessions and you dealt with all 7 of these in detail. Maybe you did that, but you did it 6 months ago, if you did it. And I really question if the public was engaged, and if really there was a public engagement process. Let me give you a quick illustration. And I know that's time consuming and therefore very costly for this city to engage the public in a public engagement process, as you did with the riverfront visioning process that you broke into bite-sized chunks, and from what I read in the paper, staff is currently struggling with trying to continue for the downtown riverfront area. I understand time is money. But this is a proposal to allow these units in all zones in the city. It affects every single citizen, homeowner, or renter in the city. And I'm going to suggest to you, if this is step one in the city's plan to revise its zoning laws and comprehensive plan to allow affordable housing solutions like this, but not only this, you really have to engage the populace. There's an education process. There's stuff here I don't understand. And I served 3 years on this commission, including 1 year as chair and 11 years on the Astoria City Council with many a late night on land use appeals. I think we ought to have the opportunity to think about this. Now, you can kick this upstairs to the city council, but as a planning commission member, I was advised early on that the planning commission's job is to sweat the details, to deal with the minutiae of this stuff, so that when you present it to the city council, you can say, a lot of effort went into this. We didn't just deal this, you know, off the cuff. So if you've dealt with all seven of these, and you've taken a look at other cities, and you've tried to learn the lessons, for example, of Portland, what they've done right and what they've done wrong, and that's been a thorough public discussion, we're off to the races. But if you haven't yet gone through that process, I'm urging you to stop, take the time to do it right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any other presentations by persons who would speak impartial to the application?
Hello, my name is Sarah Barty. I live at 1661 Irving in Astoria. I'll try to be brief, and I agree with much of what Doug just said. I'm not opposed to accessory dwelling units. I see the reason for it, and it's addressing the housing crisis, that people are moving here and we have nowhere to put them. But I do think that before this gets approved, it needs to be narrowed to ensure that it does fulfill that. I think something that's very important is, and I don't know how you go about writing this stuff in, but I think it's important to put in there some kind of clause to ensure that if somebody either converts a garage or builds a new structure, that it is rented on a minimum of a month-to-month basis, that people aren't building these and renting them out as nightly vacation rentals. And I know that, I don't know how you would word it, but I know it's possible to do that. Because if that happens, you know, we haven't solved the problem at all. Another thing I was thinking is the adequate parking thing. And as you were saying, there are some neighborhoods that as it stands, there's a parking shortage. I know there's a stretch of Irving where everyone's parked on the sidewalk. There's no driveways, you can't get by. Again, that could be written in there, you know, if someone on that stretch applies to build a tiny house in their backyard, I'm sorry, your neighborhood isn't approved. There isn't adequate parking to accommodate for more tenants. What else? Oh, and I do think that ideally, new construction would not be visible from the street. I think a huge part of the charm of this town is how beautiful it is. You can walk up and down the streets. I know that's why I moved here. I'd never seen a town this well preserved. But you don't want to shoot yourself in the foot and just say no to everything, which is why I think this is a good idea, but we maybe need to narrow it. So I think ideally anything built new, not visible from the street, and has to match or be congruent with the style of the house. If you're converting a garage, which I myself had considered doing, and I don't think it was an official application, this was years ago, I had called the city and asked about it. And they said, well, we don't have anything code-wise in place for that right now, call back in a couple of years. But if I had, you know, my garage is also 1905, and it would look
1905, you would drive by my house. I'm not into doing it now. Now I could use the garage space. But, you know, you'd drive by and you'd say, there's an original garage. Little would you know, my mom's living in there. So I don't think any of this stuff is impossible. I think you can write this in there, and I think it's worth taking the time to do it. I love the idea of this, and I think it can potentially make this city more affordable to live in and increase the density, but I think we need to be careful that it doesn't get out of hand. So, that's all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.
Hi, my name is Katie Rathmel, and I live at 92287 Molescu Loop. I also have a house on Grant 663 10th Street. I am here as a member of LCPS as well, and I think that what has been said so far is exactly right. I personally would like to have it slow down just a little bit so that we could talk about these particular issues, whether it's parking, setbacks, what have you. I just don't think we have enough information as to how it's going to affect our neighborhoods. I don't think we have any idea of how much density we can increase. It would be nice to know, you know, how many more housing units we could put in Astoria, you know, and not overwhelm the system. So I would ask the Planning Commission also to continue this and let the public have a little bit more time to discuss and think about this issue. Thank you.
Thank you.
Excuse me, hi, I'm Dave Pollard. I live at 1676 Jerome in Astoria. I'm a lifetime Astorian. My family came here in 1900. And we've had a deep commitment to the city for a long time. I live in a National Historic District in a designated historic home in an area that would be, I think, significantly impacted by the proposed changes in the development. I see us as experiencing a renaissance of sorts in Astoria, and really, I see much of that change as positive. Feel good about the changes that have gone on. But I also believe that the changes that we're making in Astoria are fragile. And when you look downtown and you look at the number of buildings that aren't filled, they aren't rented, you know, there's a lot of potential for growth, but in the commercial areas, that growth hasn't occurred as yet. And the people who come here, who are excited about being in Astoria, are also people who can go anywhere they want, and that their income is portable. And if they find another place that's exciting for them, they'll go there instead of here. I find myself in the unenviable position of speaking against a proposal that was designed to create affordable housing. But in reality, like the prior speaker, I don't believe that that proposal will actually create more affordable housing. And here's one of the problems that I see. Last night, I looked online and I checked to see that there were 13 vacation rental by owner opportunities in the city of Astoria, and also that there were 35 Airbnbs. At the same time, I'm well aware that there are a number of other homeowners that are renting out their properties without ever being officially Airbnbs. So what happens is that you have a tremendous demand for transient housing and for recreational housing in Astoria. At the same time, I've been really interested in how many homes are empty around our house. And so about a year ago, I walked the neighborhood. Our house is on 1676 Jerome, which means that Placid Community College is on our south side. There were 31 houses that were recreational properties or not lived in full time. I went by the same properties before, within a day of coming here. There are now 29. Now that means that people are coming in, buying those houses, not living in them full time, not participating in Astoria's economy. not really a part of our community, but yet holding the properties, like the prior speaker. What I'm afraid of is that this proposal can be a petri dish for creating Airbnb properties and transient housing properties. Because one of the problems we have with government is enforcing the rules that we establish, especially if we don't have a system in place to enforce those rules. So the question is, can we control who parks where and how many cars they own? No, we really can't control that. Can we actually control who lives in the house if there's an accessory dwelling unit there? Well, it's pretty difficult to do because people may live in the house, they may not live in the house, they may rent under the radar, some other person may take residency in that property. And then what we have are individuals who are not property owners owning the accessory or living in the building where the accessory dwelling units are. Or we have a lot of people with automobiles parking those cars in spaces that could be used by residents or other individuals. So my concern is that we don't want to place ourselves that eventually causes a situation that occurred in Caddo Beach, where the number of rental properties for vacation dwellers ended up overwhelming them. In Seaside, where the same thing has happened, now in Gearhart, and the potential for that same thing happening in the city of Astoria. So that's my first concern. And I think it's the major concern that I have about the proposal. A second concern that I have has to do with densities and parking, and that's already been brought up. We live across from Classic College, and if you'd like to have a frustrating moment in life, just come over and visit us about 11 o'clock in the morning on any weekday, and you can park a number of blocks away from our house and enjoy the exercise of walking up to the place. Below us, on the streetscape, which would be between 16th and 17th on Irving, there are 8 homes. Now, where we live, there are 3 homes along that. Each one of those homes, with the exception of the first one, our house and Doug and Deb Cobb's house next to us, has the opportunity to have accessory dwelling units in the basement, on the third floor, and in the lots surrounding it, and so do John and Ada Ann Walcott's house, which is on 17th Street. What we're talking about is not only increased densities in areas that really can't handle the increased densities because they don't have the infrastructure of parking in place, but we're talking about these increases in housing in other areas and Glassville, some of the other streets in Astoria. I am concerned about that. And one of the things that I really appreciated is when people had to come to the city planning department in order to get variances, that there was some kind of control set on how much that density was going to impact the neighborhoods and how it was that it was going to impact the quality of life in those neighborhoods. Another thing that really concerns me is what these kinds of changes could in effect do to the historic neighborhoods. For example, if you convert the basement into an accessory dwelling unit, that won't really impact visually how that neighborhood presents itself. And we live in an area where one block away, there are big houses turned into fiveplexes, and there are duplexes, and there are rental units. I am not categorically opposed to those kinds of changes, but I am deeply concerned about what tiny houses can do to historic districts. We have never gone to an historic district, and we go to every historic district we can find in every town that we travel to, and we carried for years a field guide to American houses, and it was really kind of our destination. We have never seen an area that was successful and presented itself well that had these things like tiny houses, trailers, and so forth. And I think that if we're going to present ourselves to the city, to the state, to the world, as a wonderful town that supports historic preservation and historic districts, we need to be very, very careful about the kinds of structures that we build into our development code. I think we should really think seriously about that. I think that besides the fact that I don't think that the proposal will actually have the kinds of consequences that we're hoping for, I think that it's really important that we protect the quality of life and that we make sure that the changes that we embrace are really going to do what we hope they'll do. Counselors always ask this question, whose needs are being met? So I'd ask that about this proposal. Whose needs are being met? Thank you.
Thank you.
So we've kind of blended the two together, the impartial and persons who would speak against, but is there anyone else who would wish to speak against the application?
To this, and particularly the tiny house concept. I'm going to read just for a second here a couple of things out of the comprehensive plan. This one concerning general land and water use goals states that, and I'm quoting, it is the primary goal of the comprehensive plan to maintain Astoria's existing character by encouraging a compact urban form, by strengthening the downtown core and waterfront areas, and by protecting the residential and historic character of the city's neighborhoods. It is the intent of the plan to promote Astoria as the commercial, industrial, tourist, and cultural center of the area. And then down a little bit farther, CP 220.8, concerning housing policies, states that, and I'm quoting, Astoria's historic neighborhoods are recognized as some of the city's most significant assets and should be protected through the historic preservation ordinance and other city actions to produce or to protect individual structures and neighborhoods. Wherever possible, renovation of existing structures should be carried out in lieu of demolition or new construction. If you think this is okay and you're going to vote for it, well, I would like to hear from each of you how tiny houses gutting all of our neighborhoods are going to protect the historic character of neighborhoods. That's one of the wonderful things about Astoria is our historic homes and our residential areas. And we need to protect that. And I don't think tiny houses are the answer at all. And I think that there's not anything that's convincing that says that these are going to end up being affordable housing units. In the finding of facts down here, it says that the ability to use land efficiently will allow property owners to partition lots and use the proceeds to finance improvements to existing historic structures. It would also allow adaptive reuse of existing buildings, providing income for the building owners, and in turn will facilitate restoration and maintenance of historic buildings in various zones. That's a finding of fact, that's what it says. But that's not a fact. People are not necessarily going to use whatever money they can get from their tiny house to work on their house. So I just think, you know, it's important to be careful about that. The other thing I want to say is probably the thing that concerns me as much as anything about this is that people in Astoria still don't know about this. And they don't know what you're doing. And I know you've had meetings. In most cases, people don't know what you're meeting on. And so I would just say, again, do what you can do to get this information out to people. And I think that before you go on and go farther, there does need to be a meeting that you have with the community to hear about this, because these are really sweeping changes that you are proposing, that are being proposed for Astoria. And
you know, it's just, as I said before, it isn't fair and it isn't right that people don't know about it. So please, will you try to get that going so that people hear, the owners of property and as well as renters, know what's being proposed here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Pamela Olivia from 64 Greenwich Avenue. Astoria's beauty, charm, and economic engine are its historic buildings and vistas. Having succeeded in making Astoria a destination, the amendments that are proposed, in my opinion, will negate this accomplishment. From what Director Cronin has said at LCPS meeting this evening, I've rearranged this a little bit. One of the things that has bothered me about this, not only don't not appreciative of the tiny homes amendments, but it's from your housing study, it seems that there are other strategies that have been proposed that would be more effective and more widespread in lessening or increasing affordable housing. If these tiny houses are approved, I would like to add some things to it. That it would be a type 2 and not a type 1 permit to provide opportunity for comments on it. That tiny homes should be a conditional use and not a permitted use in any of the zones. And that the tiny homes would be permitted in a manufactured or RV park. Now, whether this is possible, I don't know all the configurations in Astoria. The concern also is the nebulous quality, not quality, but design guidelines. I'd like to see that design specifically mention that design guidelines have to be adhered to in the particular historic zone, and also design guidelines for those homes that are not in historic districts or designated as a historic house, because every home should have its own aesthetics, not just an historical evaluation. With the parking, I am one of those people who uses a garage for a car. And there is a problem in many of your streets with parking. Many people have two cars. Just we do now, but that's because I can't throw out my old one because of yard debris. But so that is a big concern, and they're narrow to boot. And you just take a look, take a little drive about 5:30 to 6 up and down streets, and you will see the parking problem. And in addition, the ordinance for that is a little too wishy-washy for my taste. One space may be preempted to the requirement of three total spaces. That seems to be you'll have a lot of contention in that you don't have any criteria what determines that. I would like the location of entrances. I think the siting, which has been mentioned, of the tiny house should be a part of your design. And that should be stated in this section so that if you're going to do a tiny house, that you know right away there are design guidelines for both historic districts and buildings and all residential areas. But preferably, I would like to see this tiny homes eliminated or into a cluster zone, which I'm not sure you can do in this town, which has been done in other places, but apples and oranges. So I hope you consider the effect of tiny homes on the character of your city and whether it will actually increase affordable housing. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lori Johnson. I live at 1193 Harrison Avenue here in Astoria. And I've decided that I really want to be for something. And I am for protecting and maintaining our historic neighborhoods. So this is a concern that I have. And I would ditto much of what the speakers before me have already said in that regard. It is a charming part of Astoria. And I have a question. How can a tiny house fit into the affordable criteria by the time the person, I have no idea how much they cost to build, because this is all kind of new to me. I'm interested in looking it up now, but by the time you, because I have apartments and I know that my apartments are lower income apartments, and I don't know how I could rent a tiny house by the time I had the cost to build it and the increased taxes and whatever. So it doesn't seem to fit into the affordable criteria as far as I'm concerned. And I would love to see some of the buildings that are empty downtown be reutilized, improved, and fit into that category. I'm concerned about the parking issue because where I live at 1193 Harrison, there are three churches within a block. So do not come there on Sunday morning between 10 and 1 o'clock because there is no parking, even for those of us that live there. I feel like this is all moving too quickly, and that's the other thing that I commend the people before me. I would like to see a community discussion on this to really nail down some of the effects that it's going to have on those of us that do have historic homes and do live in historic neighborhoods. And like Dave said, you know, who is this helping? Is it helping those of us that are residents that are paying taxes that have historic homes? Or is it helping people that move into our area without a job and they need affordable housing, or people who aren't going to stay here and continue to contribute to the community? Thank you.
Hello, I'm again, for the record, I'm Jack Osterberg, 1711 Grand Avenue in Astoria. I have to begin by admitting that I am not well prepared, and I didn't have any prepared comments because I just returned from vacation this afternoon and looked at my emails and saw that there was a hearing tonight, and so that. But I did speak with some other people from the LCPS who are members just like I am. I am also a member of the HLC, but I don't see how that has any bearing here tonight on this giving testimony to you on this particular matter. I would just echo the comments that you have heard in opposition and also in that are neutral on this matter. I agree with most everything that has been described, just like Marie did before me. One concern I have is, again, as Dave Pollard had talked about briefly, was kind of the overall impact on the historic districts. I guess I see a lot of shades of gray here with this proposal. I can see many aspects that I support and even like, but other elements that I'm troubled by. And without going into all of those, I will just mention a couple. And that would be the issue of the placement and the existence of tiny houses in the historic districts of Astoria. I am not 100% convinced that they could never be placed without an adverse or negative impact. Perhaps there are ways to find a location. Perhaps some locations could be allowed in certain circumstances. But just in general, the reason that I must unfortunately speak in opposition tonight is just because that's the way the staff report is presented, and that is, unless I favor every aspect of the recommendation of staff, then I must speak against the application, unfortunately. So I do have a concern about the tiny houses. I live in an historic district, and I do park my cars in my garage. in any case, I would agree with the testimony that has been given regarding the parking issues and other questions and concerns that have been brought up. I guess I would also agree that perhaps more time should be spent on this. That's kind of a difficult request to make of the commission, because you might be thinking, hey, wait a minute, we already did our work and kind of ready to go now. But nevertheless, we received tonight a number of committed individuals who have brought up some very good points. They brought them up in a better way than I have. Again, I'm not prepared. So I would urge you to listen to the testimony that you've heard tonight, both neutral and in opposition, and consider, after your discussion, perhaps consider a continuance and perhaps more review. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
Are there any other presentations this evening?
Actually do not own a historic property. I am a member of the LCPS, and I am on a lot that may potentially be able to be subdivided at some point in the future. And I have enough area to build an ADU or these tiny homes, but I'm here to speak against it, even though it may not be in my financial best interest. I think that this is starting down a slippery slope as far as our community goes. I relocated here about a year ago from Portland. I was in a small neighborhood in northeast Portland that had a number of smaller homes that we ended up seeing removed and replaced with either skinny homes or large homes that were out of place for the entire neighborhood. So when I first saw the proposal 6 months ago, I was very concerned that a lot of changes that have been taking place in Portland may be starting to take place here as well. So that's why I'm here this evening. When we first received the packet, when it was first posted online about a week ago, I think that myself, along with it sounds like a couple of commissioners, were somewhat confused about why we were reviewing the staff report from April again, because it didn't seem to like we were going to be addressing minimum lot sizes and other such things. So I don't know why we didn't get an updated one, but I appreciate that if it does move forward to City Council, that they will receive an updated one. But I had a couple other concerns as far as the actual changes that are being proposed. I think that this might be a good start, but I think that we do need a number of revisions. I agree with a lot of the revisions, I agree with some of the proposed revisions as far as whether it can be seen from the streets. I think that these are opportunities that many of us in Portland realized after the fact. Could have prevented a lot of the destruction of the visual appeal of the neighborhoods. My wife and I have been coming out here for the last 10 years before we decided to move out here. Our favorite thing to do out here was walking around the neighborhoods. So if we can incorporate the ADUs with preserving the appearance of the neighborhoods, and we can retweet this before it gets passed. I could be persuaded to go into the in favor side of the proposal. I don't see on the proposal here where it addresses the number of accessory dwelling units. It just says an accessory dwelling unit may not exceed 40% or 800 square feet in size, whichever is smaller. It doesn't say that there can only be one. I would be afraid of a number of tiny houses showing up on a property that was a larger property based on what's here. And I agree with what was said by other folks this earlier today, that we really need to make sure that these proposed building changes are for affordable housing, not for potential vacation rentals, Airbnbs, and those sorts of things. We really need to make sure that whatever gets passed is actually going to be for residents to live here in Astoria. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other presentations tonight? Last chance. At this time, we will close the public testimony, commission discussion, and deliberation.
Pardon me. I would like to thank everyone that showed up this evening. I see a lot of friends and neighbors out here, and I appreciate them coming to speak, especially because they have voiced a lot of the concerns that I had in reading through this. My first question to if it's Mr. Pearson, if I could ask Evan a few questions.
Please.
Yes. So Mr. Thompson had 7 points or questions that other cities that are dealing with these issues have been asked. And I'm wondering which of those apply to the Planning Commission. And
I don't have those in front of me, so I can't tell you one way or the other.
I don't know that I need an answer now, but if you could look into that for us, which ones would directly apply to us as opposed to the ABC or the HLC. Because I think that those are all very valid points that we should look into. I also agree with Mr. Pollard's concern. I think he wasn't the only one that brought this up, that the concern about not being able to review each of these applications individually, which we do have the ability to do now if we update this as proposed, we would lose that. Also concerned about how units will be used and how such use will affect neighbors and community. And that isn't directly a question for you. That's just something that I'm concerned about. And then all of these pretty much lead to the issue of parking, which is a very major concern for me. I had sent an email to you and a few others about the infill of housing that we have noticed in our neighborhood over the past year to 2 years. And I think that if we were having this conversation 5 years ago, that I would feel very differently. But having seen just what's happened with parking in a two-block radius of my home, I am very concerned about what we have going on. And I'm a neighbor of the reason. I agree that on Sundays we do have a lot of parking issues, but a number of chronic vacancies have been filling in. And as an example, the manse on the corner of 11th and Grand, and it would be the southwest corner of 11th and Grand, was a chronic vacancy. And that has become occupied. There are, I believe, about 5 people living there. They've been moving in and out, but they have at least 1 car each, and there are a lot of cars that show up there. The chronic vacancy, and I don't know the address. address, but it's 11, maybe 11, 18 grand. A yellow building on a very small lot. I believe it has about 30 feet of frontage, and that had been a fourplex for a number of years. And about 2004, 2005, that changed hands. And someone tried to, I shouldn't say tried, they turned it into a single family residence, and it sat vacant the entire time. Their intent to flip the property didn't work out. And it did finally change hands again within the last 2 years. And the first person that moved into that, I'm sorry, it's now being used as a triplex, I believe. And the first person that moved in got three vehicles and then bought a fourth. And the frontage allows for a car and a half, basically. And so then those cars start spilling out into my block of ground and in front of my door. And then the second tenant that moved in there had two cars, and one of them he abandoned in front of our church, and the other he would park in front of my place. And then the third person moved in, and we continue to get these issues with parking that didn't exist 5 years ago. And part of the thing is that if you go by there at noon, you probably wouldn't have any trouble finding a parking space, but the person who gets off work at 2 o'clock in the morning can't park close to his unit, so he parks in front of my unit, and then when he shuts off his loud stereo and slams his door, then I'm alone. And so are all of the other neighbors on the street. So I don't mean to take up so much time on that, but I think it's important to realize how serious the parking issue is becoming and will become. Again, this is just existing residences that work on vacancies that are now being occupied. If we start allowing more and allowing, considering an on-street parking space to cover for what's now required to be an off-street parking space, we're going to have some real issues, and I think it will seriously affect the neighborhoods, the neighbors and the neighborhood and the overall community. I don't think that I'm ready to make a motion for a continuance because the other commissioners haven't spoken, that I would be in favor of one, since it seems to be the consensus of the audience here, that would be helpful.
I'd also like to thank everyone who commented. It was pretty obvious that everyone here, at least, wants more information and more time to think about this. And I appreciate that. I think an informational session would benefit a lot of people because I heard a lot of questions, I think, that are already addressed. In particular, the vacation rentals, while we don't have good enforcement currently, we're not proposing anything that would make them any more legal. So they would still be illegal to have a nightly or weekly vacation rental, even if it is an accessory dwelling unit. I also appreciate the design review process, or the we certainly wouldn't want to see pop-up shanties on the side of a house that looks nothing like the neighborhood or the house. So I'm not sure how we would accomplish that, or if it's already addressed through the building permitting process. I could use more information on that as well. So many notes here. I think primarily an informational session, maybe a back and forth between Planning Commission and the public, whether it's a work session or just an informal informational session, would be beneficial to me and to other people before we move forward on this. In general, I like most of it, but I do certainly have concerns and new concerns about some of the material in there, so I'd like to spend more time on it.
I agree with you. I can't think of any pressing matter that means that we don't really have time to take more time. And I genuinely think that we have taken time, but I see no reason to not to take more time and try to find a way cross-section of the public, because that, you know, that's going to be of value no matter what. And I, there are some things that were said tonight that I hadn't probably thought of in great detail. I live in an 1890 house, but not in a historic district. We have parking, our street's all dead end, and we do have parking problems. And we have an 1891 house that has been converted to three units, and two units and a half. And something over a garage, and we have, you know, we have the mix. The thing that hasn't been discussed here, and I know a number of you and consider you friends, the thing that has not been talked about here is affordable housing. And I also want to protect the area from second home owners who don't really participate in our community. This doesn't really deal with that. I don't have any wisdom about how we deal with that. But I've lived here now for something over 20 years. And I remember when we were the affordable housing resource for people who were working in Camp Beach and Gearhart. That just that long ago. And I remember one of the arguments of keeping the community college here was that we had affordable housing and we had student housing. That's not the case anymore. And it's not that these are people we don't know. These are people that I see when I go to the Blue Scorcher, when I go to any of the coffee houses, the pubs. These are people we enjoy interacting with and who contribute to the warmth and vivaciousness of this community. So I don't want us to write them off. We do need to find a way, may not be tiny homes, but we need to find a way for people who work here to also live here. And right now it's becoming less and less possible. And I think that was probably uppermost in staff's minds when they did this work, and certainly something the council and we have pressed them to do. Astoria simply doesn't have a lot of vacant land to go out and build apartments. They're just, you know, I remember coming here and doing a little survey of vacant land, and there wasn't much. This was 20 years ago. So we need to find some way that we don't keep closing off housing options from each town in our beautiful county. And I know that some of you care deeply about that issue because I know you as human beings. So I know that parking is an issue, but there's some value choices that are going to have to be made there between our housing needs and finding ways for people who live here, who work here, and who have not yet come to the point in their lives where they can afford to buy one of our wonderful old homes. Or because of their own circumstances, don't choose to have a home that they have to maintain. So I'm happy to continue it and continue that discussion and maybe get some of those other people here so we can have a real exchange. And I think, unless I'm not sure my dues are paid up, but I'm also a member. So I consider you part of my tribe here. But I think we just need to recognize that we are becoming so cute and so popular. And the cruise ships come in, and they said, oh, what a wonderful place. Let's see, a lot of money, let's buy a house. And that's not what makes Astoria. So it is a struggle, but I think we need to struggle to find ways for all income groups to live here.
I have issues with parking. I have issues with I don't think this is an affordable home remedy. People are going to put, add an ADU or add a tiny home, and it's going to be at full market rent. I don't see it being at a reduced rent. And that's the business I'm in. We talk about these units not being able to be seen from the street. Well, what about it being seen from the neighbors? Do the neighbors not matter? I have a problem with that statement. That, you know, it matters to all of the surrounding property and street. You know, the homeowner adds an ADU because their mother's sick or whatever, and that to me seems legitimate. Their mother dies, something happens to them, then it becomes another rental unit. It's no longer what it was intended for. There was talk about the ADU being a way to help finance the repairs to the house. Well, what about just taking the money that you're putting into the ADU, putting it into that? And the square footage of an ADU being at 800 is larger than most studio or one bedroom apartments. By about 300 to 400 square feet, which is substantial. So you're probably adding at least two people to that unit, and you're definitely impacting the neighborhood. So I think we need to take a much longer look at this.
Yes. Yes to so much that we've heard tonight. Primarily, a huge thank you for presenting your points of view and getting here and speaking, which we know is the scariest thing that happens to an American, apparently, is they have to speak in front of other people. I don't see what we have to lose by continuing this. I am so pleased with all the energy I know that has gone into the various editions we've had of these articles. And it would appear that we need probably to do some more time with good suggestions we've gotten from this audience, and I'm sure we're going to come up with some more questions. Sorry. If we were to request a continuance, is that a situation where we ought to be specific with what it is that we are asking for more information? You know, how specific do we need to be? I think you could tell us that. And I know the work has only begun on defining and coping with what is called affordable housing. There's a new definition every place you can get one. So, well, we'll keep working on that. Obviously, we all will. It's a group project. So I am inclined towards letting some time pass and getting more information.
Commissioner Spence?
Yes, I want to thank the speakers. They were very clear in identifying their concerns for their neighborhood. I particularly support Mr. Thompson's presentation and what he would like to see. I would like to see a copy of that matrix. And if you would get it in the hands of Mr. Cronin, he will get it to all the board members so that we can see. I think it is important to see what pitfalls other cities have gone through, and we see it in our own counties, as was mentioned, going down the coast. I cannot see the compatibility of many houses going into a historic district. I agree that that has to be preserved, and if any type of accessory units are in there, some type of design review is certainly required with participation of the neighbors. I am all in favor of a continuance. I would like to see some type of, I don't want to use the term of workshop, but he was mentioning our visioning sessions for the three segments along the waterfront have been very successful. We involved the community, got feedback, we made adjustments, and in the end, it was supported. And I think that is very important for you, the community, to support what we're trying to do. And what went through my head, too, is that we do have a very important historic district that must be preserved. But our boundaries for our city are quite extensive, and I think there are other opportunities outside of the historic district, and maybe we can put some type of exclusion in there. But it definitely needs more work, it needs more input, more dialogue between you, the neighbors, and we, the commission. So I'm in favor of a continuance and some type of joint meeting with concerned residents.
Thank you. It's been said before, but it's worth saying again, thank you all for coming out tonight. It makes a difference. We appreciate all feedback for and against. As the staff pointed out in the beginning, there's been one accessory dwelling in the last 5 years. To a lot of people, that could seem like something's not working right. There certainly should be more going on in Astoria. We live in a vital community that has to move forward in some form in the urban city. To only have one accessory dwelling means it's not working. The development code is not healthy as it is. So I fully support going forward with finding a way to make accessory dwelling units work. In my view, for historic preservation, it's never supposed to be a moment frozen in time. Astoria is about so much more than that. We've always defied the odds because we've never allowed that to define us. We love our historic buildings. This is just a tiny little section of the development code. It doesn't preempt anything else. This doesn't stop the good work of the Historic Landmarks Commission. This doesn't stop the protections that we have. This doesn't change any of the on-street parking rules that we have. This is just one little section about just accessory dwelling units. All that being said, the Planning Commission has always had the role of making tough decisions, difficult decisions. It's never something that everyone agrees on. In fact, it's a very rare meeting that everyone thinks we've made the right decision. But I find it completely unacceptable, fair or not, if there's a perception that we've been rushing a decision. So I would be in favor of continuance as well to continue the discussion, but would again make the statement that this cannot be a moment frozen in time. We have to move forward with some type of possibility to present to the City Council, and there will be an opportunity again for a hearing and for the public input, and let the Council work at it as well. So with all that being said, I would move to continue this public hearing to October 25th at 6:30 for the City Council chambers. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion is approved. Thank you again, everyone, for coming out tonight. This will, again, we'll have the same discussion with the presentation from staff.
Yeah, so do you want me to go through some of the questions that I heard from the audience so we can keep the dialogue going, or are you ready to call it tonight? It's up to you.
If you're prepared to, or sure. We can do a presentation at the start of the next.
Yeah, so what I should do is go through some of the kind of the misinformation that might be out there.
Please.
So the on-street standard doesn't change that. What I was trying to do was provide an on-street credit for those folks that do have an actual city street in front of their house. You can strike that from the proposal and just require the extra parking space in the off-street. So that was my way of trying to be creative to maximize the space. The VRD, or vacation rental dwelling standards, don't change with accessory dwelling. Somebody could do a homestead lodging through their accessory dwelling unit. If you want to not allow that, you can certainly add that partition in this proposal. But as it stands, you could rent out your accessory dwelling unit as a homestead lodging. Design review, thank you, chairperson, for pointing that out. We have design review for most of the city. whether it's the gateway overlay zone or it's located in a historic district or next to a historic structure, it requires either a historic landmarks commission review or design review. So that is not before the planning commission tonight. It would be before those other two entities if a proposal came forward. So that gets addressed. The other question about review types, there is nothing in this proposal that changes the review types. The review types are going to be determined by the zoning categories in Article 2. We're not looking at Article 2 anymore. So currently, it's conditional use in the R1, and it's outright permitted in R2 and R3. So that, again, is, I think, a misconception that I heard tonight. So with that, I just wanted to kind of wrap up some of the questions that I heard from the audience so we can kind of leave on a more positive note.
Thank you. Thank you again, everyone, for coming out tonight. We have one last item for public comments for non-agenda items. These will be items we haven't covered tonight as part of the hearing, if anyone is interested in speaking. In that case, we're adjourned. Thank you again.
Okay. So I have the great privilege of attending a training last Saturday, September 17th. It was a civic leadership training, but of course is aimed at planning in Oregon, building successful communities. I limited myself to some statements about it because I could run on forever. We were a totally engaged group of 20 plus people and gave up lunch and the whole nine yards to get as much time from these people as we could. We began by naming topics that we hoped would be covered in the day, and I think this is extremely germane. This is a group of people, just like anybody here, who are getting informed about topics, and they included, we asked for information on affordable housing. What does it mean? Are there any ideas? Anybody having good luck there? Small houses, tiny houses, ADUs, what can we do? We asked, how can we better serve our community? We asked for ways to lessen frustration and distrust at public meetings, as well as how to convey a sense of fairness and transparency to the public. The program agenda really was predictable. History and context, planning process, long-range planning, current planning. Then we got into what was very engaging, planning commission versus council roles, hearing process, ethics, and community relations. Of course, there weren't necessarily any conclusions drawn in any of this. It was an opportunity to hear what everybody was thinking about these particular topics, but with excellent experience from the leader about what has worked in some communities and not worked and so on. But his job is to give us the big overview on planning. So, communication is really the knob here that is so hard for all communities to work out, and I'm very concerned about it, but how wonderful having all of you come. That's the beginning. This leader has a strong conviction that much of what was written as land use planning guidelines and approved in the year 1973 in Senate Bill 100 was the main approval process for the language and the focuses that we have in making any decisions about land use planning. And he would argue that at that point, what was of most interest was farming and forestry. And there is a lack of streamlined approach and new terminology with regard to matters that pertain to urban development. So he would like to, of course, see all of that changed, and he writes these things in his dreams, and he's watching the state senate and legislature for when they would ever have any time to get engaged again in any new thinking, and he's saying he doesn't see it starting until 2017, but he's pushing. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And In the meanwhile, there was a suggestion from a couple of people that to increase the understanding of the citizens who want to follow the planning process, that in some cases the director is asked to do apparently what might happen a bit tonight, a pre-hearing training where we, the commissioners, would not be present. And he would explain what the, you know, cases or whatever are on for the night, any language clarification, and most importantly, getting out the definition of the appropriate criteria that the commissioners will have to deal with, and any commentary would want to be restricted to that topic as well. And appropriate criteria, I just watched people's face go blank as mine did, as I struggled to understand what that was at the beginning. So some people have had some luck with asking their director to come out, he's the neutral presence, and explain that process for that night, for that hearing. In other words, more education to try to explain these rather technical programs that we need to follow. Almost done here. I thought it spoke to the spirit of how this man leads, and he's a consultant in many other active roles, and that is that he urges us that at all times we are to be gracious hosts. Gracious, gracious, he kept saying that. That when we are open and welcoming and pleasant, that the best will come to pass. And of course, we would hope that's echoed from the response we would get from the audience as well. So thank you for listening. I enjoyed it to great effects and learned a ton. Now we're done.
Thank you, Pat. We appreciate it. My apologies for cutting you off at the end of the agenda there. Are there any other reports of officers, public comments, or any other business before I adjourn?
So we've got,
there is.
We've got a one-for-the-pound presentation, a kickoff to our economic development strategy at Fort George next Wednesday, starting at 6 p.m. Come on by if you can. You should receive that flyer through email here. We also sent out utility bills.
Got
the utility bill notice for the Astro West expansion open house. That proposal will be before you on the 25th.
On which one?
This last one right here.
Okay, thank you.
So I had a question for staff, not directly related to this evening, but in the past we have been told on a public hearing like this that we should not have ex parte communication. Basically, when someone in the public asks, can I talk to you about something that's coming up on the, I should say, no, we shouldn't speak about this, but on the Riverfront Vision Plan, we have been told that it's a good idea to take any public input, even outside of the chambers here.
So there's a difference between a legislative hearing and a public, quasi-judicial public hearing. As a quasi-judicial, you are a judge, one of seven judges, and ex parte contacts could influence you in your decision making. With a legislative, you're just making a recommendation on a piece of policy to the city council.
So
you can have discussions outside of this meeting about legislative amendments.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify that so when people want to talk to me about Riverfront Vision Plan, I'm still within.
You're fine.
But when someone wants to talk to me about a public hearing, that I should.
Right, so if someone wanted to talk to you about the conservatory music, as much as they are a huge fan of that music place, you should be talking about that, because that was a quasi-judicial hearing that we had held tonight.
Great.
But our discussion about ADUs is legislative.
Correct.
So we had a conversation.
Yeah, so Type 4 application that you just declared.
Yep.
I have one last question.
Okay.
Several years ago, a former mayor and a former council person felt it would be a good idea to put microphones in the audience for people who were too shy to come up and speak at the lectern. I'm wondering if we can turn those off. They magnify all the sound.
These ones right here?
These currently owning it with their name.
So those are the mics that actually record the minutes. Not these mics.
Is there anything else for the group tonight?
I don't think so.
We're adjourned.
Thank you.
I guess the fairies in town, so I'll put my fairy hat on.